Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best People We Know Radio Show. Welcome to the Best People We Know Radio Show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Hey, how are you, all my favorite people? Yes, that would be you, because we are the best people we know. Love us. And I just love doing this show with you. I'm really grateful you're here. I always believe that people are listening for a reason. Things aren't an accident. So whether you're listening live or on a replay or on iTunes, or you're sharing this with a friend, you're listening to it while you're at the gym, whatever it is, there's a reason why you're here. And today's show is going to be spectacular, because it's all about having you get your happiness, finding your happiness, positive psychology, the enchanted self. Doesn't that sound delicious? I love that. It just sounds great even when I'm saying it. And we have an amazing, amazing guest, Dr. Barbara. She's somebody I've been trying to get on for months now, so I'm really grateful. So I'm going to read her bio before I start with that, and we can take your calls at 347-637-1318. You just press 1, and that'll put you through to the switchboard. Or you can type it in the chat room. But before I do that, just make sure that you get those worry-free updates. Mark us as a favorite. Follow us, because I do have a lot of shows scheduled beyond the typical Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we don't want you to miss out on all this good stuff to feed your whole soul so you can step into your greatness. So without further ado, I'm going to read a little bit about Dr. Barbara. She is a positive psychologist whose mission and pleasure is to teach you to put joy back into your life while increasing your enthusiasm and energy. What started out for Dr. Barbara as a research project to see what messages we absorb as girls in our society led instead to a secret about women that she felt had to be revealed and emphasized. The secret is that we have great capacities for happiness, pleasure, and joy. However, the dark side of the secret, and there always seems to be one, is that we don't know how to use these capacities to our advantage. Sometimes we even forget that they are there. The results of not being happy as women can be incredibly painful for all of us. There can be loss of energy, of physical and emotional well-being, which will only interfere with mental health and the fulfillment of one's desires. There can even be chronic depression. Dr. Barbara uses her 7 Gateways of Happiness for Women to help you increase self-esteem, find inspiration, increase optimism, experience positive feelings, and finally achieve the state known as enchantment. Ooh, does this sound great? Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein has been a positive psychologist in private practice and licensed in the states of New Jersey and Massachusetts since 1981. And I am encouraging and telling everyone, please visit her website. It's wonderful. Dr. Barbara, it is a pleasure to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm great. It was wonderful listening to you. I'm already inspired. I love that. Step into your greatness. That's just such an encouraging statement. It just feels, I can just see myself and others taking a big, giant step.
Oh, well, I know that you're going to give us a big, giant step. You're going to give us many big, giant steps to keep us going. Make sure, let's just give your website before we start the show in case people
sure.
want to go and visit that and they might have some questions. Can you do that for us?
Yes. Enchanted Self, that's one word, enchantedself.com is my website for adults. And for girls and tweens and teens, it's the truth for girls. .com, thetruthforgirls.com, all one word.
Oh, well, it's a little vacation for me going to your website. I just love it. I feel so happy when I go there. And, you know, visuals are a great way to create emotion, and your books and your covers and everything that you have there for resources. And you have a lot of mind vitamins. It's just great. And thank you for doing that. Thank you for helping us today. You know, I am really inspired. I love the science. Being a biology major, I love the science. I love the clinical studies. I love prospective randomized studies. But, you know, I love the heart that you put into the clinical side of your work. Can you just tell us a little bit as we get started here what your research with women was about,
mm-hmm.
and what you discovered about women that was so shocking?
Well, my research, first of all, was case study, and I happen to love case study because you do get to the heart and soul of people very differently than just with statistics. And what I was trying to find more about are some of the issues that came up in my treatment room again and again, where women seem to carry such heavy messages from childhood that oftentimes were very hard to get rid of. Things like you're beautiful but dumb, which was a real message that someone had, or your brother will go to college, you'll go to secretarial school. Typical message. Mm-hmm. Perhaps not quite as much in this generation, but things like that have been around a long time. So I took a number of questions, things like, what are some of the messages that you remember in childhood, both the ones that were said openly and the ones that were secret that you just knew by living in your household. And then I asked a series of questions, how have those messages affected you as you got older? And I threw in, just for fun, a question, when do you feel happiest? When do you feel most uplifted? And I went ahead and interviewed many women. So I discovered that, of course, women had a number of dark messages from childhood. And that didn't surprise me because that was part of my hypothesis. And what did surprise me and what led to the aha moment is that everyone I interviewed also had something that made them very happy, where they felt extremely competent and together, whether it was the garden that they had in the backyard, babysitting grandchildren, whether it was the work they did professionally, whether it was a sport they did like skiing, whatever it was. And yet, as soon as they would tell me about this wonderful part of their lives, so many of the women would say, oh, but it's really nothing, or I don't know if I'm really that good at it, or I only do it, you know, once in a while because my family needs so much, blah, 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 needs me to help with this or that. And I saw that this part that I ended up calling the enchanted self part of ourselves is so precious, and everyone has it. That was the good news. But as you said in your introduction, Debbie, the dark side was that all the women in my study, it doesn't mean all women, but in this group of 18 women, all of the women dismissed it or diminished it almost as it was out of their mouths. And then I started to think about our society and movie stars and, you know, being gorgeous and faceless and all the things, that the ways women are perceived and handled and talk to in our culture, and I began to realize it's very hard to hold on to our enchanted selves, you know, and women really needed help with that. Men do too, but women in particular were very sensitive to criticisms or feeling we haven't made it. So this then became my mission as part of my life work, to help women so get in touch with their talents and their potential that even in their dark moments, they'd have enough strength that within a few hours or the next day, they'd be back on their horse, feeling good about themselves, and working hard again to achieve those enchanted moments when we really are integrated and happy. So that's basically what happened.
Well, it's just wonderful work, and I, you know, what I love about your work as well is that you discover that we all have common ground. I think a lot of people, I know sometimes I feel this way, maybe somebody listening feels this way, we're the only ones with this, you know, little gremlin voice in our head, you know, that seems to repeat something from childhood, and it's like, why am I thinking that, you know? And you really bring, you take away the shame that there's something wrong with any of us for having that. It's just part of the human condition. But you give so much hope in identifying it, labeling it, taking the power away from it, and then creating for us a way to access, as you so beautifully defined it, the enchanted self. I mean, it feels so much better for me to be happy. I can't be happy with somebody else if I don't enjoy my own company. And, you know, it really is an unselfish thing to really feel good about yourself. You know, I'm just going to deviate. I'm just curious because I, as a positive psychologist and in your research, why is it that those beginning years seem to have so much power for the rest of our adult lives? That we can intellectualize our thinking may be wrong, but we still seem to be attached to that emotional voice. Why is that,
Well, that's partly biology and quite understandable. For example, Deb, if you and I right now had an opportunity to spend a week on Mars and there really were strange gremlins that ran that planet, we would probably remember the first week with much more amazement and emotion and whatever, shock, all sorts of levels, than once we had lived there 4 years. You know, so we have to remember that babies and little kids are seeing for the first time, even if you believe in reincarnation, apparently we don't hold all the memories between lives. You know, they're just swamped with new impressions and interpretations and judging what they're seeing and how people are handling them. And the radar and the sensitivities are really so much more sharp than as we become dull. You know, like the first time I remember seeing a TV set when I was a child, I mean, I was amazed. Now, if you showed an 8 or a 10-year-old that little black and white screen that I had seen, they probably walk past it in the room and wouldn't even notice it because the culture has made it nothing now. You know, now it's 45 inches up on a wall kind of thing.
So fascinating.
A lot of it is the shock and the impact that it's happening when we're so open and when we're not used to things. And that's why the language that parents use and the attitudes is just so critical. You know, you can have a teacher who, negative once to a child in the first grade may have an impact that comes back to haunt that person.
Well, the good news about your work and what you help people with is the realization and the hope that that enchanted self, the one that enjoys the garden and enjoys the music or whatever it is that you've defined the enchanted self in us to be, that that's where you can help people to really access that magnificence or stepping into the greatness, right?
So exactly.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, how we should really define it so that we can all be on the same page and then how to access it.
So, well, really, if you're going to step into your greatness, which is really your birthright, then what you need to do is recognize your own talents and strengths and potential so that you don't get lost in trying to copycat someone else's destiny. There's nothing wrong with having goals that happen to be very similar to someone else. You know, there's more than one astronaut, for example. But if you don't uniquely recognize your own stuff, your talents, what you're good at, what feels right, where you excel, you're going to have more trouble stepping into your particular greatness. So a lot of my work that I do with people is educational. And in the Seven Gateways to Happiness, I teach people the third gateway is getting your needs met and recognizing what you need to do to move forward, which can be as simple as understanding what level of education you need to be successful in a choice you're making, or how you need to learn to negotiate in a particular workplace. Otherwise, you're going to miss the boat, even though you have all the, you know, you have a lot of things ready to step into your greatness. But if you happen to have an environment where one has to be pretty shrewd and skilled in negotiating and you don't learn those tools, you will not be able to step there. So a lot of the work ends up very practical work rather than extremely, you know, psychologically based, although behind the practical work is psychology in the sense of learning how to read your own radar and learning how to read what feels right to you and what you're really good at. You know, we probably want to make a living at some things we're pretty good at, while we may want to have a hobby at things we're really, by other people's standards, not good at all. I might want to play the trumpet, you know, in my home and be terrible at it by outward standards as a hobby. Mm-hmm. But I may want to be, you know, a policeman or a hygienist, dental hygienist or something as my work because I am good at those techniques, good enough to earn money with them.
But, you know, the key that I think I'm hearing you talk about is you have to be passionate. You have to be enthusiastic. And it has to be one of those situations where if you're doing it, maybe you're not noticing that that much time has gone by. You know, if you're a palm tree, you're
right.
not going to plant yourself in Alaska. You have to be in the right environment to come into full bloom. And
right.
we all want to be beautiful in full bloom in our enchanted self world. So, you know, those are some great things. You know, I'm wondering if you could just, and people, you have the Seven Gateways listed on your website, but can you just, do you mind sharing those? Because they're
no.
so wonderful with people that are listening. Although I am telling everybody to go to your website, theenchantedself.com, because it's really filled with valuable information.
Yes,
but I'd like people to hear your Seven Gateways.
I would like to do it because they're so simple rather than mumble-jumble psychological language sometimes can get very complicated. The first gateway is simply self-esteem, to put it very simply, and that is beginning to recognize your talents, your strengths, and your potential. And if you have trouble doing that, get a girlfriend or a loved one, and you do their list and let them do your list and see if that can get you any closer to actually being able to acknowledge some of your strengths.
Oh, that's a great how-to.
Yes, and you may have to play with that list over time because it takes a little time to recognize our own greatness, and we never fully do because we're inside of ourselves, but to get close enough to it to really use it for your own benefits as you move forward. And the second gateway is fun in the sense that it's really getting to know the story of your life. Now you know your talents and your strengths and some of your potential. But where do you fit in the storyline, the narrative of your generation of being alive? Are you the first person to go to college in your family? Are you the first person sustaining a divorce and successfully raising kids anyway? You know, it's not always great news, but it is your narrative. And within that narrative, what are you passionate about? You're not only a divorced woman raising two kids, but you're passionate about maybe the kids having time with both parents, which happens to be a tricky issue that not everyone's passionate about. But something you believe in and you help, maybe you're in a group that helps people, even if they never got along with their spouse, understand why a kid may need to love two parents, etc. So there's something that comes out of the narrative that you're passionate about. And, of course, if you have family, you may want to talk about the stories of your lives. There's all sorts of interesting things you can do. You can tell funny stories generationally. Every family has some funny stuff. Or it can be more serious. So that's the second gateway. The third gateway, as I said, is meeting your needs, often including education. And the fourth gateway is pleasure and happiness. And women in particular tend to shortchange themselves on this gateway because they're caretaking and they're so overloaded and multitasking. So a lot of this gateway is even remembering what you like to do, because I have found a lot of women forget by the time they're raising kids. You know, if you suddenly give a woman who has three kids maybe finally a week off and she knows her kids will be safely taken care of, and you say, well, where do you want to go? It's free, a paid vacation. Oh, I don't know, you know.
Isn't that funny?
You know, I don't know. And then you have to, like, help her. Well, when you were 18, you went to England once. Would you want to do something like that? Oh, yeah, I used to want to do it all the time. I made friends there, and it's so long ago, and I have to, you know, you have to kind of rev up the wheels again. And really, women need help with that. And once they get started, then very often they do become passionate about either a hobby or traveling or a fitness program or something that really is right for them. So it's really important. I often explain that gateway as like if you have a triangle, it's the pinnacle, it's right in the top. Because if we run on empty with our emotional gas tanks, you know, we're really not good for anyone, and nor ourselves. And then the fifth gateway is mentoring. I might be mixing the fifth and sixth, but it really doesn't matter. Mentoring and looking for mentors, that we're constantly learning in life. You know, right now I'm reading this book that's really on the top hit parades of books, and it's, I forget the exact title, but it's this Abraham who's supposed to be a kind of composite channeling group from the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Well, anyway, there have been different books over the years that are sort of channel guides that come through. The Course on Miracles was based on that same principle.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to see this wonderful wisdom that who knows where it comes from, but is educational and helping people move forward. And no matter how old, you know, we are, there's going to be some level of wisdom out there that we need. And also, there's some level of wisdom we can offer someone else. So it's reciprocal, and we have to be looking always both ways.
And do you find that sometimes people think because it's easy for them to share a specific talent or to manifest something that other people view as being really terrific? Do you think because it comes naturally that they think everybody else has it too?
Absolutely, and particularly in families, parents often make it so hard on a kid because they're good at something and they don't understand why the kid isn't getting it.
Yeah, so just because somebody's good at something doesn't mean that they should assume, there's that word, that somebody
right.
else can do easily what they are able to do on a regular basis, hence
right.
the ability to really celebrate that one-of-a-kind shine.
Right,
so,
right.
yeah, mentoring, I really, and I work with youth at my parish, about 15-year-olds. I've got like 50 of them right now. But I really think that one of the issues, of course, you've got a whole series on this in your books, your truth series.
Yeah.
But I really think the world is lacking great mentors.
Yeah. I think you're right. I don't know if we're really lacking them or we haven't known how to invite them in and acknowledge them with enough courtesy and celebration that people really come forward.
Yeah, which
you
is
know?
Why your work is so important, and especially your truth series for the teens you work with. So I am really in your fan club for that one. But I want to get to 6 and 7 because
yes.
I think they are very important yeah. as well.
Yes, well, 6 is really important for women because basically it is belonging and not isolating. Now, men usually don't have much trouble belonging. It's not as deep as the way women hook in. It may be playing golf and they're telling jokes, but they belong with each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to make best friends and tell their secrets and it's very important to have these tight connections. But when a woman feels a little bit off, oftentimes she withdraws. And the very time she should make a phone call to a good friend, she doesn't, because she doesn't maybe want to share her emotions or is afraid the other woman won't have time to listen, whatever it is. And that's not good. We have to push through that. And I like what you're saying, like, about your parish, because the more we can have automatic things in our lives, like our church or our synagogue, our community center, a political group we're part of, or a book club, the more we're less likely to isolate just because we have an obligation. We have to be somewhere. And once we get there, our mood will usually improve unless someone is very depressed. You know, once you get there, once you're at the spaghetti dinner, once you're at the dance class, usually you start to chat, you lighten up, and it's extremely important.
I think that one of the greatest cures for depression is to just get out and volunteer somewhere,
mm-hmm.
do anything.
Right, well, you're now at the seventh gateway.
Okay. Segway.
So the seventh gateway is simply the good deeds gateway, that above all else, just incorporate a positive action and good deeds in your life, and it will be probably the strongest protective mechanism you can build in. It will not solve all your moods. You know, again, it's on a scale. Some people have mild moods. Some people have very severe moods. But once you get going and once you feel that connection that you're important, you're needed, if it's to drive Meals on Wheels, whatever it is, you will receive back it's a two-way thing. It's sort of, you know, you feel better because you're helping someone, and usually there's a good response.
Mm.
So of all the gateways, I always say if you don't know where to start or exactly how to uplift a mood a particular day, go to number 7 and do a good deed.
Yeah, oh, I love that. I just love it. You know, when I talk to the kids, you know, they have a hard time sometimes visualizing, well, why am I going to do something? I'm going to do something good for somebody else, and the concept that it's going to really help them in the process. They're going to be the first one receiving the gift. And I use the analogy with playing basketball because they can all relate to that. If they want to win, if they want to be successful for themselves and their team, and they want to pass the ball call to somebody to you know, make that score that point, they want to pass it to them. What do they have to have first? And they kind of look at me with, you know, Deb, what are you doing? What are you talking about? You're crazy. I said, what do you have to have first to be able to do that, to win, to have success, to help the other person, you know, get dunk the ball in there, or whatever you call it. Well, they have to have the basketball first to be able to pass it. And I think they forget that, we all forget that if you want to feel better, you know, the best thing to do is to give it away, because you have to have it yourself first to do that. It's like giving yourself a good deed, and that sounds pretty nice to me.
Yes, it sure does. It sure does. And, you know, now all the positive psychologists who do statistical research have run around asking people to do things like do a one good deed a week, or make a gratitude list before you go to sleep. And, you know, of course, they're finding that the moods of people improve. Now, they don't necessarily stay up 6 months later or a year later, but they absolutely improve. And it's kind of stuff, you know, I think a lot of theologians and wise people have known, obviously, for thousands of years. But the biology is now supporting all of it.
Wow. Wow. This is just so, I mean, everybody, you have to go to this website, theenchantedself.com, and really look at this. And, of course, you want to get Dr. Barbara's book, and she has many, but we're just going to ask a little bit more about The Enchanted Self, and you've brought it to the public, and maybe you can give us you know, a tour of the landscape with that, and then a little bit more about when somebody gets The Enchanted Self, what can they expect to learn and get? You know, we've touched on these seven gateways, which are phenomenal, but, you know, in picking up the book, there's so much more there. So maybe you can share on
I'll
that.
I'll share that briefly, and then I really want to move on to the girls, because they are our next generation. It's so critical.
Sure.
But when you read The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, you get to know a lot about women, different kinds of women, case studies, talk of all sorts of things, where I share my own history of development. And the end of each chapter, you get exercises to do for yourself along the lines of some of the things I've been saying, so that by the end of the book, you recognize your own enchanted self, but you also get a chance to explore the song of your soul, which is really the most passionate slice of your own identity that comes through with purpose.
Okay.
And in order to get to know that, you know, you have to work on knowing yourself, your own history and your own talents and some of what you need to work on, et cetera. And so it really has that workbook component in the ends of the chapters. And if you've ever had any counseling, even if it's pastoral counseling, you know, anything, you'll find it interesting, because a lot of the women that you'll meet in the book have been in therapy with me and gave me permission, and you see their inner lives. So it's fascinating.
That is just absolutely, you know, that's something that we all need to read, whether you've been in therapy or not. I think that, you know, you being able to bring real life into it from people makes it much more alive and so forth. But let's go to the tweens and the teens that you're writing for girls now. Why are you doing that? And tell us about your Truth Series.
Yes, well, the Truth Series is designed to find a way to help girls hold on to the best of themselves as they grow up in our culture. And I had to think of a way, you know, to just write a self-help book, even if it's pretty easy, I don't think is the way to win the kids. I finally decided, after much thought and a couple of other rough drafts and so on, that a diary written by a girl where she could be very honest And basically an upbeat kid, not a disturbed kid, but a kid with typical problems, could talk, that the kids could identify and also see by her abilities to hold on to the best of herself in certain hard moments, and her competencies and the things she had to learn and work through become invigorated and more sure of themselves as they enter the storm of adolescence. And so the first book, The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything, really does that. The girl is 11, turning, and then she's 12, and she is beginning to develop and change, and she wants to hold on to everything she's learned in childhood, but, you know, how to do it. Because like most kids, she's pretty wise and sees a lot of stuff. And also sees, you know, what teenagers get involved in, and she knows it's going to be a tumultuous few years. And she does figure out there's a little mystery embedded in the book, and she loves Nancy Drew, which is part of why she probably ends up thinking of a little mystery to solve for herself. And she finds a way through a special locket that her aunt has given her to hold on to some of herself as she's turning 13. So then in the second book, Secrets, You Tell Me Yours and I'll Tell You Mine, maybe she's 13 and her parents have moved, her mother's having a baby, her uncle is dying, and she has so many typical real things that happen. She has to make new friends. And she does, and you see some of the ways that she's helped even by her mother to do that. She doesn't really want this baby. And how does she tell her grandmother, keeps saying, isn't it wonderful you're going to have a baby brother or sister? And she's thinking, no. You know.
No, I don't think so.
Right. And then she gets a crush on this boy who, you know, hardly knows she's there. But he does finally invite her to a dance, and there's a little mystery tied into that that I'll leave for the reader that she has to resolve because she has some hurt feelings. And, you know, you see her going through all these different things, and then in the back of each book are 10, I think about 18 to 30 questions, depending on the book, that she can either answer for herself or with girlfriends or with a teacher. But ideally, her mother or her grandmother or her parents would also read the book, and they can answer the questions together because it opens so many doors where they, the parents can share how they grew up, and the girl can ask questions to them that are disguised through questions in the book, and everybody gets closer. It's a win-win.
Yes, and you know, so many parents, so many adults, so many kids, you know, it's like what you said at the beginning of our time together here today. Sometimes people with the vacation, well, I don't know where I want to go on vacation. Sometimes, you know, the teens, they know they have questions, they don't know how to verbalize it, how to phrase it, they have an emotion, but they can't put it into a word, maybe there's an intimidation, and, you know, what your book is doing is giving them the answers that they really don't even know they want to ask, you know, but when they
read and
live vicariously through the people and so forth, I think that you're bringing them to that awareness that can have an effective change in them. And I'm sure you have some favorite comments to share that people have shared with you. Would you like to tell us a few of your favorites?
Well, the one that's floating through my mind right now is actually from a woman who just wrote me from Vietnam. And the book is translated into Chinese and to Vietnamese. And the first book, The Truth. And she just wrote me that she loved the book, and she saw herself so much in this little girl, and she sort of wanted to hold on to the girl, and are there any more books, that kind of thing. But here's a woman, not a kid. So, and a lot of my communications have been with women who see themselves, and so it also is a springboard to return to some of the best of themselves. But I'm thinking also of a kid, I think she's in California who wrote me. She loved the book. She identified with a little girl. At first, she wasn't sure she would like it, and then she loved it. And she loved it so much that she wrote me a long poem about the book. And,
wow.
You know, that was very, very special. And I have, you know, obviously, when people are touched by the book, it's a very pure thing. You know, it's just like, wow, that was a good read, you know. So the endorsements have been great. And I just got a note from someone, her nine-year-old, you know, obviously you wouldn't give the book to someone until they're nine, and a fairly mature nine, otherwise I suggest 10. And her daughters loved it. So I'm very excited, and I'm going to do a workshop on self-esteem with girls 10 to 12 at the Still Heart Institute in California in June. So the book is presenting itself. The universe is helping, and it's just a great experience.
Mm. And, you know, it's so wonderful that you're able to use all that great training you have as a psychologist and really transcend, I mean, any type of nationality. Look at all the ages in Vietnam, California. There are certain conditions in the human heart that we all desire, and happiness is one of them, and I think healing is one of them. And, you know, the way that you've touched so many hearts across the world. I mean, you've just got to be so excited, and I can hear the humility in your voice, but, you know, I can hear the enjoyment and the gratefulness for people reaching out to you as well. And it's just really amazing what you've done to change so many lives. And, you know, I don't know what I don't really know what else is coming up next for you. I know you've told us about the seminar you're doing, but
yeah.
What can we look forward to with Dr. Barbara?
Well, what I want to have happen and what I see happening, but I'm still waiting for the exact universal messages to come into me, is I want the truth to be a film, to be a movie. Whether it's a series or whether it's a one-shot movie, I believe that this little girl is so true and authentic that, like Laura Ingalls in Little House on the Prairie, like the Little Women characters, you know, that she will lend herself to a beautiful experience for the person watching. And that's one thing I'm working on.
Mm.
And then I have another dream that's really part of my teaching identity, and that is that I want authors to have a chance to be part of technology now, not bemoaning technology and e-books and things like that. I want them to understand that they have a starring role, no matter, even with a fast-changing technology. And I'm developing a website to bring authors to librarians and schools and book clubs using technology, whether it's, a chat room on the web, whether it's using something like Skype to go right in so people actually see you, whatever it is. I think this has been a real missing link for authors, and authors are a gateway to knowledge.
Mm. Well, I'm a little biased, but I've only written one book. You have
mm-hmm.
so many. I mean, you have like a whole library. But I think that is really something that people are really going to jump on the bandwagon with, because it is really needed. And, you know, you've been a blessing. You're going to continue to be a blessing. And that's something that God and the universe is definitely going to open up. And it's just been, I know for everybody listening, because I know for me, a real gift to have you today, sharing all your wisdom and all the love and all of the things that you so elegantly put out. And your website and book, can you give that to us again so that we
sure.
can connect?
Sure. Well, enchantedself.com, and that'll lead you to all my books, including The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy. and thetruthforgirls.com. And the first two books in the series for girls and tweens are The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything, and Secrets, You Tell Me Yours, and I'll Tell You Mine, Maybe. And everything's on Amazon, and you can always reach me at enchantedself.com. Plus, I have posted a number of my short videos up on Enchanted Self channel on YouTube.
Yes, and I love your videos. I do share. I recycle the happiness in those. I love them.
Oh,
they're
good.
Really fun.
Good.
Using media, great. Well, I know anybody listening, if you have a young person in your life that you know needs some encouragement, some support, some positive energy, this is a great gift to give them. Get this book. Get any one of them in the series would be fabulous. And if you want to just really celebrate your own enchanted self, because when you're better, the world's better around you, you can connect with Dr. Barbara and sign up for her email updates. Maybe you know somebody in California. You can pass along this show. You can download it. You can get it on iTunes. And you can say, hey, I was listening to this, and I was thinking of you. And, you know, sometimes during the day, you want to help a friend or a family member, and you just feel like there's nothing you can do. Well, I'm going to give you an answer right now. Give them this downloaded show. Give them a link so that they can hear the hope and inspiration that Dr. Barbara has been good enough to share with us today. And I hope, Dr. Barbara, you will come back on and stay in touch with us, because you're one of the best people I know.
Oh, well, thank you, Deb, and I'm excited to know you. You know, we met sort of serendipitously, I guess, through LinkedIn, and
yes.
It's wonderful, you know. And I'm coming up to the Boston area for a wedding on the North Shore, so who knows, we may even actually meet.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
So, it's just so great. The good things in social media, that would be a
great. Right.
And I'll take pictures, and then I can post them on my blog.
Oh,
and
that's great.
That would
it.
Just be so much fun.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I am just so excited that you were here a guest, and I know I love the people that listen to the show. We're just growing. We've got about 10,000 listeners now, so I'm pretty excited, because it's only been 6 months that I've been doing the show, and I'm just really humbled and really excited that, you know, we're touching lives and helping each other. So keep listening, everybody, and we'll keep getting great guests like Dr. Barbara. So make sure you go to her website, theenchantedself.com, and get the book on Amazon. And we will look forward to seeing you all here hopefully tomorrow. Tomorrow I have Dr. Meg Meeker on. This is the theme. She's just written a great bestseller, The 10 Habits of Happy Mothers. So that'll end our week up great. So I'm really excited to be of service to everybody. So go out and be a blessing and enjoy your life and share your shine. And like Oscar Wilde says, be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Goodbye. Bye-bye.